Either way, dude. I mean, I you know, I say this every year, and it's funny.
It's different. It's different this year. I've been saying that, man. I've been saying it. It's totally different because it's a culture change. It started when Joe Douglas came in the building because, you know, that's where it comes down from. It trickles down from the top of the organization, from the guy who runs it. And we've had, you know, the worst people running our ship for so freaking long. Like Itzig and McCagnum is like a who's who of like the worst GMs like ever.
You know what's funny? I was at a charity softball game one time for the NYPD at Yankee Stadium, and I got a chance to meet Mike Maccagnan, and that was before the 2015 season when he just signed like everyone and their mother. So I literally like when he actually looked like a good GM that was like going to spend money but didn't give a shit about the future or anything like that. So I went up to him and I was like, "Dude," I was like, "you're the best." And he was like, "Really?" He was like, "Thanks, man." And I wish I could take that state. I wish I could recant that statement because I'm just like,
I actually got to meet him myself in 2018 camp because in 2018, that's kind of how like what got me started in all of this. Uh-huh. I actually started writing for Jet Nation because I'm a writer. Right, so I, you know, just messaged him and like wanted to, you know, I was like, "You guys, you know, I love the Jets. I'm a hardcore fan. Friends always tell me I have like really good takes." Mm-hmm. Like I thought about doing sports writing as well as opposed to regular writing. Right. And it went really well. They brought me on. They let me come to camp. So I actually went to camp with media for like 2 days.
Oh, wow.
And it was awesome. It was a cool experience. But I got to basically quickly meet Mike Maccagnan. And it was 2018. Like I knew I wasn't the biggest fan, but I was just like, "Hi." And that was it. I was just like, "Hey." And he was like, because it was in passing because he was like doing stuff. So
yeah. No, but that's funny though when I said it because I thought it was weird because when I walked back to my seat after I met him, it was a ton of guys. Like I saw Joe Torre there too. It was like a lot of like New York.
That's cool. Like, that's an awesome guy to freaking meet. That's a legend right there.
There's like icons and like just, you know, people in the realm. Like I met Alan Hahn and Wally Szczerbiak and stuff like that.
McCagnan doesn't belong in the same room as Joe Torre.
100% definitely does not. And he belongs in the same room with John Idzik. But
yeah, they do. Yeah, 100%.
But he just like looked so surprised when I said that. And then when I went back to my seat, I was like, "That's so weird. That like he was surprised that I said that." So, I mean,
he's not used to hearing that. Everyone's usually telling him he's a piece of shit, I guess.
I honestly guess so now that I think about it. But so like I already looked at tickets. Are you pulling up to training camp at all this year as like a fan?
I didn't get any of the camp tickets. Unfortunately, I was a little slow to, the gate, I was just watching. I couldn't believe how fast they sold out. Like that was crazy. I just couldn't believe how fast everything sold out. So I'm gonna try to get to some stuff. I mean, unfortunately, you know, it's expensive, and
yeah,
I'm on the island, so it's a lot with the commute and the tolls and mm-hmm. the driving and all that. But nothing beats like the real game experiences, like going and tailgating. So
yeah,
I try to at least make like a game or two a year. Like right. That's like what I try to do.
What I was gonna do was I was gonna go to training camp, but like you said, the tickets, dude. Like, I've never seen Jet fans so like we're Jet fans. We're hyped for every season because we think every season is different, but like, and in reality, it's really not. But like this season just feel like you said that like it's a culture change and everything like that just feels different. Like I feel like they have the right people in the right places in the front office. I think Salah is going to be a fantastic head coach. Like, you know what I mean? Just like it really feels like I don't want to say a well-run organization yet, but it feels like we're getting there. Like we have a good culture right now. So,
well, it starts, you know, with Joe Douglas. That's what I was saying.
Yeah,
before.
100%.
Like, you know, I've seen your GM.
Tweets. I've seen your tweets, and you're a big Joe Douglas fan.
I've been a big Joe Douglas fan since the first draft. Like I was saying, this guy, like everything, like from just because, you know, we had Itzig and McCagnan, and like I'm a big draft eval guy, and yeah. I, you know, like a lot of other people, I get football, and I just hated everything, like everything they did, all the decisions they made. And then Joe comes in, and I was excited because he was an Ozzie Newsome guy right out of bat. Yeah. Like the school he's coming from, the pedigree he's coming from, the draft talent he's coming from. Yep. Like maybe finally we have a guy that gets it and can draft. And it was just everything, man. Like just literally everything. Like every box he was checking for me. Like not showing his hand, the no leaks, specifically saying, you know, like he's so meticulous with what he says. Right. Like he doesn't show his hand, and like you have to like dissect, like whenever he has a press conference, I've like dissect what he said because it's so he intelligently words it, so he's not showing his hand, but there's like something in there. Like with free agency, I remember like everyone was saying, "Oh, he's not going to spend money," but that one sentence he said like right at the end of everything, he said, "When opportunity meets value, we will be aggressive." And like that, like that's what, like, unlike, you know, guys that just talking out of their ass, we have a guy where you actually have to dissect what he's saying because he's so intelligent and well thought out that he's not going to show his hand, but at the same time, he's going to make a solid statement. And then the trades he's done after that first draft, man, that was it. That first draft, I was like, it's official. We have the right guy. And everyone's like, it's too early. I'm like, trust me. I was like, you'll see soon enough. Like, if you haven't seen it yet, you will see it. This is the guy. And everyone's seeing it. This last draft was insane.
And you know what? You know the one thing that I really love about Joe Douglas that we haven't seen in really ever is he's so fiscally responsible. I love that. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's nice to like sign, you know, older established players, you know, big flashy free agents to long-term cap destroying contracts, but you know, he wants to build a winner and he wants to build it the right way. And I'm a big draft guy. Like I'm a big believer in the young talent, you know,
that's how you have to do it. That's exactly. How you win. I mean, there's one formula that works. That's how it's done.
Literally. it's funny because I love how there's these guys that come in and it doesn't matter. It's not even football. It's like any sport really. They'll come in and they'll just sign the big free agents and they'll essentially try and buy a championship. And unless you're really like the New York Yankees of like old, it doesn't really work that way. They were really the only ones that kind of broke the mold. And then like the Dodgers last year and stuff like that. But that's what I love about him, where it's like, yeah, we could go after, see the Jets community, especially on Facebook. I'm a part of a bunch of like Facebook groups for the Jets on Facebook. And dude, it's such a toxic place, bro. Like every time there's a free agent that either gets like cut or like someone is just a big free agent, everyone's like, yo, we need to sign this guy. And I'm like, no, like we don't need to sign this guy. Like, just stop. That was the most recent one was David DeCastro. So it was like, oh, like DeCastro's a former all pro. Like, yeah. And this guy's also coming off of his third
DeCastro. I mean, it depends if he was healthy. Injury. That was the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like on paper. Yeah. Like I looked at it too. And you know, me being a Jet fan too, like I look at it and I'm like, damn, the Jets could really use someone like that. And then you think about it and you're like, yeah, former All-Pro, hasn't really been too healthy lately, and he's going to sign with a winner. Like, he's in the twilight of his career, essentially, especially after this.
Well, we don't know what's going to be going on with, like, that's the thing. Like, I mean, if he wanted to play, I feel like, you know, maybe if the Jets made a good enough offer, but he's got injury problems. He's had injuries for a little while. He's getting up there. Yeah, Moses was the signing man. That was it. Like, bringing in Morgan Moses. Yeah. Like, he knows what he's doing. And that's kind of like what you were talking about, you know, before, with, like, you know, understanding what to do. Like, I used to make that joke about Itzik and McCagnan all the time. Like, I would you know, joke that, like, you can't build a team through free agency. Like, you can try, but it's not sustainable. Like, they did it in 2015. It can work temporarily, but it's not sustainable. You need to cultivate and draft talent and build a culture. Just signing a team. And you're basically sending the message, like, by doing what they did, Itzik and McCagnan, they couldn't draft to save their lives. Neither one of them could draft at all to save their lives. And not only did they not support their quarterback with talent, they couldn't even draft, period. So by doing what they did, by just, you know, spending like crazy in free agency, like McCagnan spending $250 million in one free agency alone on guys that don't deserve it. They're basically, him and Itzik just constantly made the statement. They're like, okay, well, I can't evaluate talent for shit. Like, I don't know how to evaluate talent or what to do or how to do this at all. So I'm just going to let other teams do that for me, and I'm going to pick up their scraps and pick up the guys that they can sign. Like, that's basically the statement that they made. And Douglas gets it, gets the opposite. And I had the same mentality because, like, I'm a big draft guy, but I was preconditioned, thanks to the Itzik years and the McCagnan years. Like, I was preconditioned to be super excited when free agents started. Back in 2020, I realized I was wrong, and I wrote a whole article on it about how, you know, Joe was correcting the spending of McCagnan to put us back in a correct financial situation. 2020 rolled around, and I was so excited. I was like, free agency, who are we going to sign? What big guy are we going to bring in? And then he didn't do much, and then everyone's crapping all over him. But then I realized, like we were just talking about, that it's not supposed to be about free agency, that we've been preconditioned wrong because of these bad GMs, that we get so psyched about who are we going to bring in? Who's the big name free agent that we're going to sign because we couldn't draft? Like, Joe's focus is the draft. You're supposed to build through the draft and supplement through free agency. But forever, we've had building through free agency and just whiffing on draft picks.
It's such a bit like... You think about it, and it's like you said, we were preconditioned wrong. And it's so funny because when he came in, and I knew there was a lot of hype surrounding him, and you know, they got him and everything, and I was like, oh, this is the start of something good. And then when free agency rolled around, I was like, all right, great. And then I see all these 1 year deals for, like, you know, like role players, like decent players, but like stop gaps essentially. And I was like, what is this and everything? And I thought to myself, I was like, you know what? Like, let's just trust the process. Like, Jets aren't going to be good overnight. Like, it's going to be a 2-3 year long process before we could be any kind of playoff contender, really. So, you know, and then I understood it. Like you said, we kind of hit the reset button as like a fan base too. It was like, we went from wanting the big free agents and spending all that money to now it's like, oh, I don't want to spend $12 million a year on that guy. Like, that we can get someone like exactly. that through the draft. Yeah, exactly. And, yeah. And I feel so much better about it now because, you know, you look at the teams that are slowly getting better and better as the years go by. You know, you look at like I feel like the Chargers, the Browns are really going to make a lot of noise this year because, like, you know, they're pretty much fiscally responsible. Like, the Browns have been insanely fiscally responsible before all these huge, like, signings because no one wanted to sign in Cleveland. So that's essentially why they have all this rollover cap. And now they could sign guys that they need that they can't get through the draft. Like, you know, they signed John Johnson, they signed Jadeveon Clowney. Like, it's guys that are impact players, but they're not the superstars essentially. Like, the guys that they drafted are still the superstars. So, like,
yeah. Or even if they do, the guy they bring in, it's a supplement. It's to complement exactly. the players that are already there. Exactly. You're not building through free agency. And like I said, man, it's, we realized that, like, as you remember, you know, when even this free agency rolled around, Jet fans, you know, they wanted Joe Thuney, they wanted certain guys. I feel like Joe Thuney gave us, like, and I pointed this out too, like, I realized this immediately as well and gave the take to Jet fans. I think Joe Thuney gave us, like, the perfect example of what we need to strive for. Because obviously, if you're, you know, one of the best available free agents, best available offensive lineman, everybody wants you. You have your pick of who you want to go to. Yeah. You're not going to pick a team like the Jets. If a team like Kansas City wants you, that's already ready to go with a coach like Andy Reid, a quarterback like Mahomes. So it made me realize that's our goal. Like, mm-hmm. our goal is to eventually be in that position, like, in a year or two, where a player of Joe Thuney's caliber that has options chooses us.
Exactly. Yeah, you want to become a, like, people see the whole, oh, it's New York narrative is one of my least favorite takes in all of sports. Same thing with, like, the Knicks, the Yankees. The New York factor doesn't matter anymore. Like, yeah, you know, it's still one of the meccas of, like, all sports essentially, but that doesn't work in free agency anymore. It doesn't. Some people, no matter how much money you throw at them, they want to win. So, like, that's, like you said, like who wants to, even if the Jets offered him, say, 5 years, $100 million. And he's like, well, I'm going to be playing for the Jets for the next 5 years. And who knows if they're going to be a contender. And then Kansas City gives him what it was 5 years, $80 million, I think, for Thuney. Right. And then, and you know, he's like, oh, well, I have a chance to win a Super Bowl every year there. It's a destination that people, I feel like, will take less money, or the players that actually want to win Super Bowls will take less money to go there to be a part of a great culture, be a part of a winning culture, and win Super Bowls. And that's eventually what I feel like we're kind of slowly climbing towards on that success mountain with the Jets.
Like, I agree. No, that's exactly where we're at. And you see that with even just this last free agency, guys like Carl Lawson, mm-hmm. Hardy, all of them literally said, I came to the Jets because of Robert Saleh. Vinny Curry said, I came to the Jets because I'm very intrigued with what Joe Douglas is building here. Mm-hmm. Like, this is it. This is what you want. And like you said, you know, I say it all the time. My saying is, Rome wasn't built in a day. Like, I mean, we have the right pieces now. I really feel like we do. Like, we had the best free agency of anybody. Joe Douglas, he proved it. That's what I expected. I figured, you know, in 2020, I realized after the fact he had to do what he did because of freaking McCagnan. The guy spent $250 million on, again, not just on players, but players that didn't deserve it. Guys like Henry Anderson, the dude's got 7 sacks in one season. It's his best season of his whole career. Yeah, let's give him $25 million. That sounds about right. Darryl Roberts, a 7th-round pick who's never looked like much. Give him $20 million. I mean, that makes sense. So he had to fix that. Like, that's why you mentioned those one-year deals. It made sense because you're trying to fix the budget. You bring in guys on prove-it deals, which he did this year too, with guys like Jerod Davis and Sheldon Rankins. He took guys and said, okay, well, you have potential. Prove it. And that's what's interesting, like with the Pierre Desir thing. People thought, you know, it was such a bad signing. It didn't work out, but it wasn't a bad signing at all. It was a prove it deal. Be the guy or get the hell out of here. And he did. He wasn't the guy. So he got out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was so excited about that deal. The Sheldon Rankings deal really was like, for me, like I've always loved him as a player. And I thought, you know, cause he was kind of injury prone at the beginning of his career and everything like that, but he's really put in some great seasons since he's been healthy and everything. So like, I think what was it two? It was like 2 years, 18 million. Like that. You can't really,
it's not a lot. No, same thing with him and Gerard Davis. It's amazing. Actually, if you think about it, like three of the guys we signed were first round picks in the 2017 draft. Mm-hmm. They were all first round picks. Yep. One of them did mount out Corey Davis. That's why he got paid. But yeah. Rankins, when he was drafted, he was supposed to be like Q. That was the mentality. Like, he's going to be like Q.
Yep.
But he never really was. I mean, he had one or two seasons where he was good. But like I said, there was injury, the numbers, the production wasn't there. Gerard Davis, when he was drafted, he was supposed to be like an all linebacker. Like, he was supposed to be do it all, tackler, coverage, big guy, big hitter, everything. It didn't pan out. So two prove it deals. And the way I look at it with Rankins, which is interesting, like so many people love the, I love the Rankins signing too. Yeah. But again, he hasn't panned yet. My interesting take is, I wouldn't be surprised if you see a guy like John Franklin Myers playing more than him, because Franklin Myers really shined last year in the interior. And actually, if you want to check it out, I actually had him on my podcast, my Take Flight, Spit and Fire podcast. Yeah. I had him on for an exclusive interview. And he was saying that, you know, he always played the edge, hadn't really played the interior before. But as we saw last year, it was awesome. He was really, really great at it. And now we have actual natural edge rushers in Carl Lawson, in Vinny Curry, and Franklin Myers said of Curry, like he was saying, you know, Lawson's great, they're all great. But when he got to Curry, he said, Vinny Curry has the fastest get off I've ever seen in my life. And the dude's 33 years old, but he's not slowing down. No, he had 10 quarterback hits last year. So I think it could be, you know, Rankins on the interior, Franklin Myers on the outside. But I wouldn't be shocked if you see Q and JFM starting on the interior with guys like Rankins and Foley subbing in. And then the starting edge rushers are like Lawson and Curry with like Huff subbing in every once in a while.
See, like, I was actually going to mention, I'm glad you mentioned Huff and Foley and stuff like that. Like, this defensive line, the way that it's constructed and the way that it's like, it's looking right now, it reminds me of two different teams. And the two different teams was the 2009 Eagles, when they had Trent Cole and they had Jason Babin and they had Connor Barwin. You know what I'm saying? Like, they had these guys that were just constantly in the wide nine set. They were constantly rotating. They were constantly fresh. And they were beating the crap out of every quarterback. And also the 2019 San Francisco 49ers, where just – maybe not to that extent yet, but it's just relentless. Like, remember that rotation that they had? You know, like it's unbelievable. You can't
catch. And that's the most important part. People forget about that. Like, I joke about that too. Like, too many people approach it like it's a Madden game. Like, oh, I got one or two great starters, I'm all set. Like, it doesn't work like that. Like, different players complement different situations. Foley's an outstanding run stopper, for example. And it's good to have, you know, players get gassed, they get tired. You need rotation, you need movable pieces. So we have depth and we have talent in that depth. And if you think about it, you mentioned with the 2019 49ers, Robert Saleh defenses are designed with getting to the quarterback. I looked this up to prove it. Every single year he was with the 49ers, they were always, always top 10 when it came to QB hurries. A couple of years, they were like 2, 3, 5, but they're always in the top. Even in 2020, when they lost Bosa and Ford and all those injuries, they were still top. And because that's how his defense are designed. They're designed with constant pressure, constant disruption, constant chaos, causing the play to get broken up, taking the pressure off the secondary, which is why so many people are like, oh, we're not that great a corner, while our amazingly stout defensive line is going to make up for that.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And that's what I was thinking about too. And I was evaluating, because even before we started talking today, last night I was looking at, this is what I'm doing at like 1:30 in the morning. I'm looking at the Jets, the roster right now before training
camp. I did the same thing, bro. That's funny. I did the same thing.
And I'm looking at it and I'm like, you know what? Like, corner is such a thin position right now. Like, don't get me wrong. Like Bryce Hall, I think was really good last year. You know what I mean? Like, they had guys like Brian Poole. Brian Poole is still a free agent right now, but Brian Poole played well. Like, and I'm thinking about it and I'm like, but look at that D line, man. Like, if we could just get to the quarterback every time, it doesn't matter. And plus, we have really deep, like, at the safety positions, we're very deep too. Like, I don't think people really realize that too. I'll feel better once Marcus May signs a long-term deal, but we're so deep at the position that it really doesn't matter. And everyone forgets about LaMarcus Joyner too, where Joyner played a lot of his career at slot cornerback as well. Like, maybe he's not as fast now and he can't keep up, but he could still step into that role and play slot corner if needed. So everyone,
well, really, what's excited about LaMarcus Joyner, what I love is the second we signed him, PFF immediately tweeted out showing how, you know, it's slot corner, which he played the majority of his career. Mm-hmm. He really wasn't that good. I mean, call spade a spade. He had like a 60 rating, but when he exclusively played free safety, he had a rating of 90.1. Yeah. His entire career PFF rating at safety is 90.1. The dude dominates in that free-roaming safety position where he can play and play the ball, play the defense, play coverage. And that was my big fear, like, how are they going to use him? But I was so happy, you know, when Flight 2021 rolled around, Jeff Olbrich came out and said it. He said LaMarcus Joyner will be exclusively playing safety.
Oh, that makes me feel
That's sold it for me. That exactly, man. Because honestly, with Joyner being as talented as he has been as a safety, you factor in Marcus May, who I definitely want to talk about, because, you know, as much as people don't, you know, he's going to get signed, this and that, he's still under contract. He's under contract this year. And you got to come at it from, you know, the GM's perspective. Like, I was, like we were saying before, I just, everything Joe Douglas does, I've been a fan of. Everything he's done, the things he said, I love this guy. I mean, like I said, like a whole podcast going back to 2019 when he was brought into an impossible situation, and he's still, you know, and that's something, you know, just quick side topic, just interesting, because he doesn't get enough credit for this. Like, he's brought in 2019, the massive dysfunction of the Jets. They fire their GM after free agency and after the draft. So can you imagine Joe Douglas in that interview? It's like, okay, so free agency is over. Everyone's already signed with every team, like, you know, that's good. The draft's already happened. Yeah. Do you want this team? It's like basically, do you want it? So he, and obviously that's why he demands a 6-year deal. But what I think he doesn't get enough credit for is he was brought into an impossible situation. Yeah. Like, especially Joe Douglas could have totally been like, you know what? Screw this. Like, I was brought into this impossible situation. I'm not going to be blamed for this. Like, I didn't draft these guys. I didn't do free agency. I'm not going to get the heat. I can sit back, let this team suck, wash my hands of it, get a high draft pick. But that's not what he did. He went out and tried to get guys that were still available. And that's why people crap on him, like, oh, he brought in all these corners like Montrell Meander, and he tried to with Ryan Khalil. But at the time, that was the best thing he can do. Like, those were the best guys available, because again, all the top free agents were already signed. So the guys say with Joe Douglas is, you know, he missed, but at least he swung the damn bat. At least he tried to take a swing. He could have phoned it in. Like we said, he could have been like, you know what? I'm not going to get blamed. This isn't my team. They built it. I can just, you know, sit back and let it all tank. But he didn't. He tried to put something together, and it didn't work, but he tried with Ryan Khalil. He tried. And that was one thing that I really liked about him. It showed me, you know, how motivated and dedicated he is. But I feel like he's getting too much flack with this Marcus May situation. I don't feel like Marcus May is the right benchmark to make the assessment that Joe Douglas isn't willing to pay his guys. And that's what people were saying. They're immediately saying Joe's not willing to pay his guys. But I don't see that at all. Like, first of all, safety's not a premium position.
No, it's not.
Jamal Adams learned that the hard way.
I was just going to say that we literally have an example in that in Jamal Adams.
Exactly. He learned it the hard way. He threw his temper tantrum and his hissy fit and realized, okay, well, even Justin Simmons, the best safety in the NFL, only gets like $15 million. Like, it's not a premium position. And again, coming at it from that GM perspective, May was great last year.
Yeah,
but it really was his only year he was great, and he was hurt the years prior. Yeah. So he's not a spring chicken. He's not young. In fact, he's 28 years old coming into his first contract. It's not young by any means. No, so if I'm the GM, he's on a tag this year. Let's see if he can be this year what he was last year. Let's see if he can continue to play at that level. If he does, they can pay him at the end of next year.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
even better, coming at it from a GM's perspective, you can tag him again. And if you tag him again, now if he played well, he earned that money again, just like he did this year.
Yeah.
And now he's going to be 30 by the time he's looking for a contract. Yeah. So I feel like, you know, they want to work this out. I feel like his agent has been a major problem as well in this. Eric Burkhardt has been a problem. Yeah. Like, we talk about the Jets not having any leaks. Like, nothing gets out. Like, literally nothing gets out. Nothing gets out. Like, literally nothing gets out. That ship is shored up tight. So that report Ian Rappaport got, it makes you question where he got it from. Does that come from Eric Burkhardt? Because we saw in the past when they were having negotiations, you know, literally when negotiations were going on, we saw him come forward on Twitter with his whole rant of how great Marcus May is and how he needs to be paid and how the Jets are screwing him over, which causes animosity. Yeah. So it's an interesting situation. Like I said, we don't even know if this is true. What's coming out may not even be 100% true, but could just be Burkhardt, you know, fueling the fire. But honestly, I think if you look at it from the GM perspective, putting, you know, not just Marcus May's interest, but the team and the fans' interest, I feel like Joe is making the right decisions. And I feel like, again, this isn't, like I said, the right benchmark of, you know, him not paying his guys. Like the best example would be like Mekhi Becton, who should have been an All-Pro last year. Like, yeah. Should have been an All-Pro without question. If he continues to play the next 3 years at the level he did his first year, I have no doubt in my mind that Joe pays him. I have no doubt. Same thing with a guy like ABT. So I feel like that's really why I feel like this is an unfair assessment to make on he's not going to pay his guys because of May.
Yeah. No, you're definitely right about that. And like you said, I think just the one thing that really like I understand about it is it's not a premium position. Like you said, it really isn't. And I do think that he actually will repeat what he did last year. I think he might even be better because now you have someone as good as LaMarcus Joyner with him as a nice tandem. So I think that he'll benefit greatly from that. And not only that, like, what is he expecting? You know, like you just said, Justin Simmons, who is criminally underrated still and is still is the best safety in football. You've got, what, $15 million. That's all you're really going to get. You can't get Marcus May is not better than Justin Simmons.
The theory, exactly. And May said he wanted, like, the rumor was that he wanted, like, $14 million. Well, if that's the case, then you got to be a top three safety in the NFL. Yeah. And I love May. Love him. I really love the kid. And I hope exactly. That's the answer. He's not a top three. So if you come at it from Joe's perspective, with that fact, the fact that he can tag him again. Let's see if he does it again. You know, he had one really good year and he was hurt for his rookie and second year. Let's see if he can consistently stay healthy and play at a high level again, pay him next year. There's so many options that I feel like people are looking at it the wrong way. Kind of like with the same thing, they looked at it wrong when we traded up for ABT. Anyone who was saying we gave away too much, they don't know who ABT is. I am very confident within probably halfway through the season, by the end of the season, the rhetoric is going to be, that's all you gave up. Like, you only had to give up 2 third-round picks to move up to get a guy of that quality, and you got a fourth in return.
You know what's funny? I actually watched speaking of ABT real quick, I watched the draft with my friends, and we were a very diverse group. I'm a Jet fan. My friend is a Giant fan, and my other two friends are Minnesota Vikings and Kansas City Chiefs. So, like, it was interesting to get a perspective like that while we were watching it together. And I thought to myself, 100%, you know, I did a million mock drafts. I can't even say the word without getting nauseous right now. That's how many that I did before the draft. But I always said that at, what was it, 14, that Minnesota was going to take Darrisaw. And then when I saw the Jets trade up, I said, this has to be for AVT. There's no other way and everyone said, why are you trading up for that? And then everyone forgets that, you know, Las Vegas was basically right there too. And Vegas was probably going to take AVT if he fell. So the Jets were going to be shit out of luck, essentially, trying to get AVT. And then it's a win-win 100% because they only gave up 2/3. They got exactly who they wanted. And Minnesota still got Darrisaw at, what was it, 23, right? You know, and that's why I said, I was like, that was one of the most fair trades ever. I was like, they both got who they wanted, and the Jets really didn't give up too much. But everyone said, oh, 2 third-round picks. I think people especially Jet fans, overvalue, like, some picks. Like, if you think about it, we really only traded one of our picks because the other pick was the Seattle Seahawks pick. So we essentially
Back when we traded back later. Yeah, we started with 10 picks, and we wound up with 10 picks, even though we traded up.
Exactly. So, like, we really only traded one of our own. And the other one was just a different kind of commodity. But I love ABT. I'm going to get – my name is Peter Andersani. I'm going to get Peter Andersani on my forearms like this after he gets a first-team All-Pro in his first year. That's what I'm going to do.
I do love that. That was pretty legit. I like that a lot, yeah.
That is pretty cool. But speaking of ABT, actually, I just saw that he signed – and Elijah Moore signed, what, yesterday, right? ABT signed 2 days ago.
I feel like it's a pattern, man. I feel like I'm hoping. I feel like it's a pattern, and we're going to see something very, very special tonight.
So that's exactly what my next kind of question or little talking point was. Obviously, Zach Wilson is the only, rookie that hasn't signed his deal yet or anything like that. So do you think he'll get it done before camp. Like, is this not, this is not going to be.
Oh, no, without a doubt, man. And right. I think, like, we saw it right now with the way, you know, one, two, right? Days after each other. Like, it's almost like, if you think about it, it's like, it's almost like the perfect unveiling. It's like, you know, like when you have like that curtain that you pull it away, it's like behind curtain one, you got your all-star future guard. Behind the next curtain, you got your superstar wide receiver. But who's behind the final curtain? Your quarterback. So it just, it makes sense. Like, it just feels right to me. Like, they got AVT two nights ago. They signed Moore last night. It just feels like it, either tonight or tomorrow night, it's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. Like, people, like, it was huge when those guys were signed. It's going to be even bigger, even though we know he's going to sign. Like, I mean, he's going to sign. There's no doubt in my mind that he's going to sign before training camp, but it's still going to be a big thing. And I think that's, they're doing that on purpose, that they did those two first and Wilson will be last. It makes sense.
I think, and I've said, you're on Twitter a lot too. I see. And you've definitely seen, like, you know, like CBS or NBC, they always post those, like, what's your bold take for, you know, the new football season. And I literally, I'm manifesting it in everyone's mind that sees my tweets that Elijah Moore will be the offensive rookie of the year this year. I'm calling it. I'm calling it. I love him. I think he's going to be a superstar. Everything that we heard from rookie minicamp, dude is already a stud and he's coming to be a superstar. And I, you know what I love too? I love when you draft like a quarterback and a wide receiver in the same draft. I feel like they have that, like, weird telekinetic connection that they're just going to, you know, they essentially have done everything together. They're going to be doing everything at the same time, everything together. And I think that that's an interesting kind of, I wanted to get into some camp battles or like what your expectations were camp and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think that's,
well, what you just said though, that that's so important and underrated, underappreciated aspect again of what Joe Douglas has done, because one of the biggest stigmas on the Jets was they don't give their young quarterbacks what's necessary to succeed.
Oh, yeah.
That was the big thing in the past, that they don't set their quarterback up for success. They don't give him the right coaching. They don't put talent around him. They don't care. Well, now Saleh's in the building, but look at what Joe's done.
Yeah.
In his last draft prior to this one, he got Mekhi Becton, who should have been a Pro Bowler.
Yeah.
This was my favorite offensive lineman. Like, just like Joe, my favorite of all of them, of Wirfs, of Thomas, all of them. Like, I love this kid. So happy when we got him. And then we got Denzel Mims, a wide receiver that has a lot of potential as well. Then in free agency, we get our wide receiver one in Corey Davis. Mm-hmm. We bring in Keelan Cole, who might even be the wide receiver two.
Yep.
He might beat out Mims, which,
I read
again,
that article,
talent is great.
By the way,
I read that article. And like I say, you know, talent is great. Like, if that's, if the problem is we have too much talent and who's going to be the guy, that's a problem I want.
Great,
like, sign me up. That's a problem we haven't had in years. Like, sign me up for that problem. And then this year, you said it yourself, you take your franchise quarterback, the future of your franchise, and what do? You trade up to get the best interior lineman in the entire draft. A guy on the level of Quinnen Nelson, a guy on the level of Brandon Scherff. Like, that's the quality of interior guard we're talking about here. Then they get Elijah Moore, who should have been a first rounder. That dude was the best slot wide receiver, period, in college football. You could even argue best wide receiver, second best in all yards, best slot wide receiver, period. This, I have tons of stats that just go, he is potential superstar written all over him. And then what does he do with the next pick? We talked about trading away our thirds. In the fourth round, Joe gets a guy that could, should have went in the third. Should have went in the third. Could have even went in the second. I've been saying for the longest time, he was just as good as Javonte Williams. Like, people don't realize, like, in college, Michael Carter had one less carry than Javonte, yet he had more yards and a higher yard per carry. He was the fourth best running back in all of college football last year. Like, this kid was massively slept on. So just in that out of the bat, he's doing the opposite of everything we've seen. All those guys I mentioned, he's surrounding his rookie quarterback with talent. He's giving him what he needs to succeed.
Yeah, 100%. And it's, you know, I think of Crowder and I think of Moore and I think of, that's probably my biggest, really, there's two battles that I really, really, like, look forward to seeing how it plays out. And that's really running back, just the way that the depth chart is going to fall. And then number one slot receiver, because Crowder, didn't they redid Crowder's deal, didn't they?
They did. And here's what's interesting. Like, and I guess, like, you know, with number, I don't always look at the numbers 100% at first. So, yeah. Like, at first, I remember they said Crowder's taking a pay cut. And yeah. That didn't make sense to me at all, because I was like, the dude's legit. Like, he's worth every cent he's making. Like, back when people were saying we should get Curtis Samuel and get rid of Crowder just because his money is not guaranteed. Like, I don't get that. Like, just because the money's not guaranteed, he's worth every cent of it. I think he's better than Samuel. The guy's been one of the best slot wide receivers consistently in the league since he was drafted.
Yeah.
And he's been our best wide receiver for the last 2 years. Yeah. In fact, with Sam that year, he would have broke 1,000 possibly. He was really damn close to it. Mm-hmm. So I look at it as, you know, I couldn't believe he was taking a pay cut. But then my guy, you know, shout out to Jimmy Jardine. We do Weapons Hot together. He pointed out that it's interesting. It wasn't like necessarily a pay cut. Like, instead of it being like $11 million with nothing guaranteed, now it's like $9 million with like 5 or 6 of it guaranteed. So what they did was they took the money down a little bit, but gave him guaranteed money, which any player will take. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen. Yeah, you never know what's going to happen.
You could be injured and not make anything that year.
Exactly. So that made sense to me. I feel like that was good management. And people talk about, you know, that there's so many battles, the right guard battle, the corner battle. Yeah. I, again, did a whole podcast, literally 2 hours going through the positional battles. There's like 10. There's like legit 10 battles, which, again, like we talked about, that's a great problem to have. For the first time ever, our problem is when we have all this talent, who's going to take it? I don't think the slot one is much of a battle as people think. And the reason why, man, 4 wide receiver sets. Let's spread these defenses thin. Like, we got Crowder and Moore. Why are we picking? Like, let's put Davis on one end, Mims or Cole on the other, Crowder and Moore on the inside. Man, I dare a team to defend that. I dare a team to stop those 4 guys on the field together.
Yeah. Well, that's a nightmare for opposing defenses, 1,000%. I just kind of think about it because I'm just so excited for training camp and stuff like that. Like, I'm so eager to hear like the news and everything like that. But really, I'm thinking now, like, I feel like there's always in Jet training camp, there's always some kind of surprise cut where we always go like, I had no idea that guy was going to get cut. So I think
I know who my surprise cut is.
So I think, well, I don't know if it's much of a surprise to you, but it would be for me. I think it's Blake Cashman. I think that's going to be our cut for the year, either him or Bless Austin. And I like Bless Austin, but I was reading, I'm drawing a blank right now and I don't have the tweet, but someone was like, Bless Austin has been living a facade or something like that. It was like, he's not actually as good as his numbers indicate. And his numbers, they're like, okay, but what else are you going to expect from a 6th round? You know, he was a 6th round pick, and you know, what are you going to expect? But I think that my 2 guys are really going to be either Cashman or Bless Austin. I was curious as to see who you think your surprise cut is going to be this year.
I mean, right now, Bless Austin, the CB2 spot is wide open. And, you know, people talk about, like you said, the corners being so bad. I don't think it's as – I mean, it's not great. Like, don't get me wrong. It's not like we got Revis and Cromartie there right now. But I don't think it's as bad as everybody thinks. Because, like, Bryce Hall, I love the kid. Like, this is a guy I wanted. Like, Joe taking Mekhi Becton, that's the lineman I wanted. He was my favorite. You said he's your favorite. Let's go. Then you take Mims. But when he took Hall, that was like, okay, I'm in. Like, give me Joe so I can kiss him on the lips. Like, this is the guy I wanted. Like, I'm a huge ACC guy, which is why I watched a lot of Becton at Louisville. Mm-hmm. I watched a lot of Hall in Virginia. I knew, like, I didn't think he was going to be as good as he was as soon as he was. But I was saying all preseason, you can check it out. I was saying all before he played, I was like, this kid's going to be a starter. I was like, the second he hits the field, he's going to be a starter and he's going to be good. But last year, he looked like a CB1. Like, I didn't even expect that. He looked like a legit CB1 in limited gameplay in, like we were talking about, a bad system. In a bad system with Adam Gase and Greg Williams. So with everything working against him, he looked that good. Man, I can't wait to see what he does this year. Second year, just scratching the surface of his potential. I feel like he's underappreciated. And then we talk about, you know, the second corner slot. Right now, it's an open competition between Bless Austin, Jason Pinnick, who I'm huge on. I put up tons of stats on Pinnick. Yeah. Like, I think he's massively slept on. Like, that kid on an island in Pitt was putting up numbers comparable to Stingley, which blew my mind. Comparable to Horn. Like, that was crazy. Oh, like, God. Blew
Jason
my
Horn
mind.
Was my guy this year. So
no, I loved it. I was saying Horn was better than Surtain. Like, right when that happened,
when
the Panthers took him, I figured as much, because I was like, Horn is the top corner in this draft. Like, Surtain is awesome. Don't get me wrong. Like, he was dominant in the SEC for 3 years. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a great corner. But Horn's potential was a lot better. Yeah. But when they draft drafted Horn, the big thing they were saying was, oh, you know, J.C. Horn had the third lowest completion percentage against in 2020 among all cornerbacks. What a 33% completion rating against. Well, guess what? Jason Pinnock had the number one. He had the best completion percentage against of any corner, 3% less than Horn. And then he had stats comparable to Stingley. Yeah. So just his potential just really excites me. But then you got guys like Isaiah Dunn, who's come out of nowhere.
The Brendan Echols too, right? Or something like that, whatever his name is.
Yeah, he's interesting because he's a little small, but he technically has the height to line up on the outside, but not the build. Yeah. He's an interesting character. Like Michael Carter is slot without question.
Yeah.
Brendan Echols, he's a slot that has the potential to be an outside guy, which is very interesting. So he's someone to keep your eye on.
I love it.
But,
I love this.
But you got an open competition right there between Hall, Pinnock, Isaiah Dunn, the undrafted guy out of Oregon State, highest paid undrafted guy ever for a reason. Yep. And people keep forgetting about dark horse Lamar Jackson. I mean, as an undrafted guy, so it's an open competition right now. If just one of those four or five guys steps up, then we have decent corner play right now because we got Hall at the one, whoever steps up at the number two. And then I think our slot's massively underappreciated. Yeah. I think the Jets didn't spring back Brian Poole because they were so confident in Javelin Guidry. Javelin Guidry came in for Poole, you know, who's one of the better slot corners in the league. And he didn't miss a beat. That dude came in, played just as well as an undrafted rookie. And then we brought in Michael Carter, who might even beat him out. He looks awesome in the slot.
Yeah, Michael Carter does look awesome.
Our slot cornerbacks are massively underappreciated between Michael Carter II and Guidry. But you also mentioned Blake Cashman. Just because we're kind of low-bodied at linebacker, like Mosley should – again, if he looks as good as he did in 2019, then we're set. Like if he comes out at that level – but we don't know. That's what we just don't know. And he hasn't played in 2 years, and he's close to 30. Jerod Davis was pretty much a bust for the last 4 years. I mean, he looks really good in camp, but we can't call him a guarantee.
Yeah.
The other two guys are rookies, and don't get me wrong, I love the potential of Sherwood and Nasruddin. When Joe Douglas took them, I immediately thought of that Keanu Neal type hybrid linebacker, and my immediately thought was like, okay, Joe Douglas is playing chess when everyone else is playing check.
That's like Sherwood, too.
Sherwood, yeah, no, exactly. Sherwood and Nasruddin. Both of those guys, man.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you mentioned him because I saw – you wrote an article about that too, right?
I did. I wrote an article because I like Sherwood a lot, but Nasruddin could wind up being the biggest steal of this draft.
Yeah.
Like that kid was projected to be a second, potentially third round pick.
Yep.
Because in 2 years at Florida State, he had 192 tackles. He was just short of having 100 a year. Jeez. This dude checks every box. He's huge at 6'4", 220. Yes. He's fast, strong, physical, and he's damn good in coverage. He's going to be what Jamal Adams wasn't. He's going to be that big physical guy that can cover a tight end, that can play in coverage. Man, I would even say when it comes to linebacker coverage ability right now, he's probably the best one next to CJ Mosley.
Yeah.
But just because, you know, we're a little thin on bodies, Cashman could potentially be cut, but my surprise cut is Chris Herndon. That's my surprise.
Oh, I love you for saying that. I hate.
I really think because I mean, this is his contract year. Like, what are you doing, bro? Like, even Corey Davis last year. Like, you always expect, okay, even if a player's got hurt, injuries, been bad, in their contract year, they're gonna show up. Like, they know this is the year to get paid. Corey Davis had his best year last year in his contract year. This is his contract year. He needs to prove it. He's been dropping balls left and right to the point where he's running with the twos. And Tyler Croft and Ryan Griffin have looked just as good, if not better. And Croft is one of the best blocking tight ends in the NFL. Like, offensive linemen praise his blocking ability, which is really damn impressive.
He's a red zone nightmare, too, even when he was, you know, he was on Buffalo last year, right? And then you have he was on Cincinnati before that. He was always that guy on the anywhere inside the 5 yard line that you would look for because he's
exactly big, and with Cincinnati dude. He did have a 400 yard seven touchdown season once. Ryan Griffin had that really solid year 2 years ago with us, so I wouldn't be surprised. But you know, Herndon looking as bad as he's been, running with the twos, a lot of drops, that Tyler Croft and Ryan Griffin are tight end 1 and 2. I'm now granted they're probably not going to be great. Like, it's not, you know, the greatest situation, but it's not a bad situation. That's what we're probably looking at. But now the question is, do you trust that Kenny Yabo can go through waivers? I don't know if I would, because Yabo was the second best wide receiver on Ole Miss behind Elijah Moore. Like, this dude's legit. He could have been a fifth to seventh round pick. So if I'm afraid he's not going to make it through waivers, and I got Croft and Griffin as my top tight ends, and then I even have Wesco still as an excellent blocking option, then yeah, I mean, forget Chris Herndon being a backup. He could be cut. He could be a surprise cut.
Nothing would make me happier this offseason than Chris Herndon getting cut. I know it sounds terrible, but I just can't stand him. And that's, you know, Yabo, you mentioned him. And I think they didn't sign him right after the draft. It was like a day or two after, right? Or something like that. And I said to my father, I was like, because I'm always big, you know what I always noticed too, and maybe you noticed this, that the Jets have been terrible drafting for God knows how long, but they always find really good undrafted players. Like, I feel like they always find, at least.
Yeah, like, I mean, they had even Maccagnan found Robbie Anderson.
That's what I'm saying. Every year, I feel like they find one guy that's just always a solid contributor, whether it be because of injury or anything like that. Like, they always find someone good, whether it was like, I think Damon Harrison really started that trend where it was like, oh, wow, like, all right, we got something. Then, like you said, Robbie Anderson, and you got guys like, well, John Franklin Myers wasn't drafted or signed.
He was drafted in the fourth round by the Rams.
Yeah.
And then we picked him up on waivers, which is, again, being a waiver wire acquisitions is the name of the game, which is why, you know, as teams, as training camp goes on, as preseason starts, not only is this roster not finalized, Joe could be bringing in other guys. As teams cut people, as they move on from people, there could be some new names coming onto that team.
Yeah, 100%. Really, the last thing I kind of wanted to touch on, you know, after camp and everything like that, I want to talk about like your expectations for the season itself, but really more for the rookies. Like, and I'm talking about Zach Wilson, Elijah Moore, AVT, and Michael Carter, especially because I think right now, like, that camp battle is already over. Like, I think that Michael Carter far and away is the starting running back at the beginning of the season.
I believe he should be. But what's beautiful right now is that committee's wide open. That's what's kind of nice. Like, we talked about competition. Yep. I mean, I think Michael Carter is, like I was just saying before, with numbers better than Javonta Williams. Yep. I thought he was massively slept on. I felt like he was just as good as him. Should have even been a second-round pick like he was, but should have at least gone in the third. Never should have been able around in the fourth. Like, that was insanity. But we still got Tevin Coleman. I mean, he was an excellent receiving option for the 49ers. Yeah. Ty Johnson and Josh Adams were good last year.
LaMichael Pirine.
Yeah. I put a whole video out, like, you know, showing that, because if you actually look at Josh Adams and Ty Johnson's numbers
really
last year,
their
averages were amazing. Yeah. Like, they were averaging like 5 yards a carry. They were averaging like eight yards a reception, but they were getting like one carry a game because Adam Gase is like, let's just keep feeding the ball to freaking 1,000-year-old Frank Gore.
But the two of them were good.
Yeah, so that committee's wide open right now.
If you take the Rams game especially, they were unbelievable together. In that Raiders game, bro,
they had like 176 yards between the two of them.
Yeah. Especially, that's really, I feel like the Rams game was really Ty Johnson's coming out party, because he had, I think, like 100 rushing yards. He had the receiving touchdown. I think he had like six catches on the opening drive. Like, he really actually could be something. And I think we have had nothing, and you know this, since Chris Ivory ran for 1,000 yards. It's been 50 feet of crap since that season.
Yeah.
So anything that remotely gets – because I always think I'm like, it's a dead position for the Jets. Like, whoever they bring in, unless it was – besides for the Le'Veon Bell hype, it was always like a dead position. Now I'm really excited at the fact that we have like four legitimate options that if they were like, this guy's the starter, I wouldn't be mad at it. You know, like that makes me feel a lot better. And especially with a rookie quarterback like Zach Wilson, you need a good running game. It doesn't matter. That goes for anything. You need a good running game, you know, a good offensive line, a good run game to balance the system. That's exactly what you need. And I'm really looking forward to that. And I want to see, we haven't talked about Zach Wilson that much. I really want to see what your expectations for Wilson are this year. So do you think he's going to start right out of the gate? What do you expect from him exactly?
I definitely do. And this has been my guy. Everyone, you know, talk about me. Anyone follow me on Twitter has known that back before he was in the conversations, like back in December, when I started looking at him, like late November, I knew this kid is it. Like, he checked all the boxes that I look for when it comes to NFL translatable traits, what I call cerebral traits, which guys like I've heard Joe Douglas, they refer to them as intangible traits. I call them cerebral because the game is so mental. He just checks all of my boxes. Like, people talk about his arm strength, which is great. He's got great arm strength, but to be fair, most of the quarterbacks in the NFL have great arm strength.
Yeah.
Like, that's was like one of my favorite jokes. Like, when I do QB val, like, I do my own QB val and I watch the things people talk about. I'm like, oh, that's great, but that's not really what I look for. Like, I mean, there's a reason, you know, these guys take these guys and they bust. Like, everyone's got a strong arm. I mean, James Morgan has a hell of an arm. That kid can throw a deep ball like nobody's business.
Yeah.
But when it comes to Zach Wilson, things like his pocket awareness is just, that's been the thing that always stood out to me the second I saw him. He is just so innate in the pocket with his ability to understand pressure, alignments, assignments, how his offensive linemen are going to match up against that specific defensive lineman, his ability to throw receivers open. And by that, I mean, not just putting it in perfect, excellent windows, but like we've seen in camp, putting the right amount of velocity on the ball, the right amount of touch, using his eyes and his decision-making to open receivers up. Yeah. I just, the second I started watching him, I just loved everything about him. Like, I immediately said, I don't get why everybody's saying Justin Fields. Yeah. This is the second best quarterback in this draft. In some ways, he's better than Lawrence, I was saying.
Yeah.
This is the guy I wanted. I'm so excited we have him, man. The biggest thing with Sam, way to look at it, is people were saying, you know, could he be good with a good team and talent and good coaching? Man, maybe he can be good, but he's never going to be a top five quarterback. He's never going to be that elite quarterback. Zach can be that. I truly believe, from what I've seen, from what I look for, that Zach Wilson has that potential to be great.
Let me ask you a question now. Now, this is the – and we get this. You know, being a big draft guy, me loving the draft, loving college football – we see this every year with a smaller school prospect or basically anyone that's outside of the Power Five, really, in any conference. You always get that, well, can he do it against elite competition? And I think, what was it last year? His only real game against real competition was Coastal Carolina. And he also had a top 10 offensive line in college football. So what do you see in him, really? Like, if you watch his game tape and stuff, what do you see in that separates him from that narrative that, oh, just because he's playing farmers, you know, for against BYU and stuff, that he could be elite at this level, that like his intangibles that you see is what I'm saying, like that can combat the fact that he played against less than impressive competition and that he had a great offensive line.
What I thought was hilarious, and it's with all these arguments, because again, like I was saying, I've been so high on Zach for, you know,
every year,
as long as anybody. I've literally, I've just been batting him down. Like, people saying the competition thing, that he's not a leader, all that stuff. I was just batting him down because it made no sense. Like, his teammates coming forward immediately saying the opposite, that he's a leader, in his interview saying that all he does is eat, sleep, and breathe football. But the competition thing, I didn't understand how people weren't realizing, like, how do you not get that the argument you're making actually works for Zach Wilson and against everybody else? Like, I just think about, people didn't get that. Like, you're making this argument about competition, but competition's relative. The reason I was never a big fan of Justin Fields was the same reason I wasn't a fan of other Ohio State quarterbacks. We say the term system quarterback all the time, but what are we saying when we say that? And I did like my whole, you know, I had a whole podcast episode where I talked about what this meant. We see these great systems like every year in college, Ohio State, even Clemson, which is why, you know, everyone was saying Trevor Lawrence is a generational prospect. I was the one in the background going, guys, Deshaun Watson was just as good. I don't get it. And everyone's like, shut up. Don't say that about the Golden Boy. Don't insult the Golden Boy like that. But like Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama said the same thing with Mac Jones. These are fantastic systems. And what makes it a system quarterback is they have outstanding talent around them. The receivers Mac Jones had. Sam Darnold would have killed somebody to have the receiving talent that Mac Jones had in college at the NFL level.
Yeah.
Like the offensive line he had, the offensive line that Trevor Lawrence has, the receivers he has. They're in excellent systems where I talk about, you know, there's fail safes built in. I call it the predictability factor. I joke that I hope Ohio State doesn't come after me, but I dissected enough of Justin Fields' film that I started to see it. I was like, okay, when the play breaks down on the left side, his receivers cut back in a button hook formation, or on this way, if the receiver, they have certain fail safes built into the offense that the quarterbacks know, that the receivers know. There's a reason we always see these teams as great.
Right.
BYU's never been that. Zach Wilson took a team that wouldn't have been ranked without him and made them a ranked team. He elevated them to his level. So that whole thing never made sense to me. People needed to realize that they were actually making the argument for Zach Wilson and against everybody else.
Yeah, the only thing I agree with you, and I said that too as well. I was like, you know, we've seen this with so many people, and it's not even FBS, it's FCS. Remember, it was, I mean, you know, Wentz is a good NFL quarterback. I believe in Carson Wentz and things. We had the same thing with Carson Wentz. You know, it's all those guys that come from the smaller schools that don't get the top prospects that it's like, oh, well, can he do it? But the one thing that I always had, like 99%, I'm convinced that Zach Wilson is the guy and he is going to be a superstar. Just that 1% that keeps nagging in the back of my head is that top 10 offensive line. And maybe you might be right where it's that top 10 offensive line because the competition that he played was bad to the point where like they don't have any great edge rushers and it just made his offensive line look that much better. But
here's the thing though, you talk about a top 10 offensive line, you know, that's graded based on the pressures that are allowed and the time Zach Wilson is sacked. That comes down to him a lot too. Like everyone compared him to exactly. Everyone compared him to Patrick Mahomes, like the Mormon Mahomes. To me, the comparison was because what I look for. To me, the comparison was always Russell Wilson because I've never seen such an innate pocket ability, the ability to just be so innate with his anticipation and his ability. Russell Wilson has the most innate pocket ability we've ever seen, to the point where the Seattle Seahawks have just decided to never give him an offensive line. They're like, he's just so good at it. We'll give him talent otherwise and not give him a line because he doesn't need it. Thank God the Jets are doing the opposite with Wilson. But I feel like that was part of it too. Like his offensive line was so good because he's making these correct decisions, because of these designated rollouts where he's cutting at the exact perfect time. I feel like he was such a major factor in that. And we saw that in the Coastal game. The Coastal game, they were all, people were saying, you know, and that's the other thing I was talking about, you know, with this, with what I look for. What I look for, the competition factor is irrelevant to me. What I look for, that doesn't mean anything in the factors that I'm looking for. And like, same thing with the Coastal game. People are like, oh, that was such a bad game, such an awful game. I'm like, well, if you were doing QB eval, I don't know what you're talking about. Because that Coastal game was beautiful to me. Like with what I wanted to see with him in pressure, with him making, you know, smart decisions and having to make decisions in pressure, I loved it. I loved everything I saw from him in that game because he had pressure consistently in his face and he stood in the pocket. He took the hits. He made the great throws. He didn't make bad decisions. And his ability just, I saw it so many times, like a defender break his left tackle and him literally move simultaneously to the defender breaking through. Like it's just unbelievable. I saw it once and I was like, okay, maybe it's just luck. But after seeing it so many times, like that's not luck. That's innate ability.
So I'm glad that you elaborated on that because people have been saying that to me since draft night, and I was obviously happy. I was ecstatic that the Jets drafted Zach Wilson. And people are saying, oh, you know, he's going to be a bust. He's going to be a bust. I mean, well, Colin Cowherd is a clown anyway, but, you know, he's the guy that's always like, he's the guy.
Whatever he says, because he said Sam was going to be great. If he said Zach's going to be bad, we're set. Like, we're set. That's exactly. Great.
He was like, oh, he's got the most bust potential and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of people have been saying that. I read constant articles. And, you know, like, that was my thing, like what you just said. Well, it was like, but do you watch him or do you watch the scoreboard? Do you watch
his stats? Are you watching the team? Yeah.
Exactly.
It's what you're looking for. And, like, that's the thing. Like, I hear all the things all the times that NFL Network and ESPN guys talk about. I'm not saying, you know, they know what they're talking about. But the things they're mentioning, it's just it's never been what I look for. I always found it so weird. They're talking about his arm strength. And I'm just – okay. I mean, like, he's got great arm strength, and that's an awesome thing, but that's, like, four on my list of, like, the things that impressed me about him that I look for.
All right. So my last thing that I want to mention, or, you know, obviously, is the expectations for the season as a whole, as a team. I want to hear, you know, your record prediction, what you think we're going to look like. We do have a pretty decent schedule this year. It's going to be challenging, that's for sure. So what are your realistic expectations for the New York Jets in 2021?
I think this is a really interesting conversation because this has been huge between all Jet fans on Twitter. And it seems like we have a very deviated split in this kind of a conversation. Yeah. We have the one side of people that see and understand how great Zach can be, the potential of him. They see that Joe Douglas knows what he's doing. We have the best free agency of any team, amazing draft. He's built a talented team. People are like, yeah, we can have 10, 11 plus wins. Hell, maybe even a playoff team. And then we have the other end of the spectrum where people are saying, you know, it's the same old Jets. We have to see what they can do. Oh, no, I fall somewhere in the middle. Like, my perspective is, so I look at it like this. I say that 10-11 wins, it's definitely possible. It's definitely possible, specifically because teams can't prepare for us. Like, yeah. Good luck. I mean, we got you can't prepare for Robert Saleh as a head coach, for Mike LaFleur as an OC, with Zach Wilson as his quarterback, Corey Davis as his wide receiver one, with Elijah Moore. You can't prepare for that because you've never seen it before. Yeah. Like, by this is the NFL. So by like week three or four, teams are going to start.
Yeah.
But my saying, Brian, I put this out the other day. I used the Mike Tyson quote that, you know, everybody's got a plan till they get punched in the mouth. And we got to punch them in the mouth day one because they can't be ready. So those first three games, we got to bring the heat, man. Like, talking about those four wide receiver sets, our deep cornerback formations we have, sending pressure after the quarterback. We can come out of this gate gangbusters, and hell, we could be 3-0. And it's possible for this team to have 10-11 plus wins. Yeah. And if that happens and we make the playoffs, lock. It's a lock that Robert Saleh is coach of the year.
I'm just going to get a tattoo of Zach Wilson on my back if we make the playoffs in this first year.
It'll be like Rex Ryan with Mark Sanchez on his arm. It'll be like – but, yeah, but I'm convinced if we make the playoffs this year without a question, Robert Saleh is coach of the year.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the hope. And, again, it's possible, but it is a rookie head coach, a rookie quarterback. So I look at that as a possibility. But more realistically, I look at it around 6-8. Because we have to remember, last year, Adam Gase fell ass backwards into 3 wins. So we should at least be able to get somewhere between 6-8. And if that happens, I'm okay with that. If Zach Wilson looks good week by week, he looks like he's making good progressions, good reads, good decisions. He's getting better week by week. The team's getting better. They're gelling. So that's the way I look at it. Like, most likely it's going to be in that middle range, as long as everything's looking good and we're moving in the right direction. Because like you said before, Rome wasn't built in a day. I mean, it takes time to turn a franchise into a competitive, successful franchise. As long as we keep moving in the right direction, I'm happy. But again, I know the potential of Zach Wilson, the potential of all these guys on this team. No one's ready for it. Man, it's possible. It's very possible this could be a dominant team that gets somewhere from 10 to 11 wins, maybe sneaks into the wild card. And then that would be the dream for Jet fans. And I just, if that happens, I can't see a reality where Robert Saleh isn't coach of the year. Yeah. After taking a team like the Jets, who have been the joke of the NFL for a decade, and bringing them to their first playoff time.
Yeah. I said the same thing. I said, and I did a on my YouTube channel, I have a records prediction video out, and I said, don't get it twisted, because obviously I say the record prediction before my explanation. So I said I had the Jets at about 7-10 or 8-9, and I said, you know, don't get it twisted. I do think this team far and away has the ability to be a playoff team. Like, it's not entirely impossible to see them win. Like you said, 10, 11, maybe even 12 games, who knows? But I'm trying to get realistically, I'm looking at, you know, as the NFL is a very adaptable league, like you said, 3-4 games in, teams are going to try and at least know what to expect by then. And also they have a really tough schedule too. So I'm looking at it realistically where they might be able to punch a couple really good teams in the mouth and get a couple of those surprise victories. But at the same time, like, I still think we're one more good draft class and good free agency away from being a regular playoff contender. And that's the way I look at it.
No, it's true. And it's how you have to look at it. I mean, like we said, the Jets, according to people like Bleacher Report, had the best free agency of anybody. I mean, we mentioned the names, just the biggest names, you know, Lawson, Corey Davis being brought in. Yeah. There's a lot of talent there. This team is super talented. Like, just going through the entire roster, there is a lot of talent on this team and a lot of young rookie talent that can be cultivated. And that's what we're going to see. So the potential is there. But again, like you said, I mean, as long as things are looking good, we're moving in the right direction. Exactly. I mean, Joe Douglas had an excellent first draft. His second draft was like, this last draft, I'm convinced, could not obviously not yet because no one's played. This could be one of the greatest draft classes in Jets history. It really could be. Like, when you look at getting your franchise quarterback, if Zach becomes what we expect, getting a superstar in AVT and Elijah Moore, getting a running back with the potential of Michael Carter, and then we talked about the hybrid linebackers, the corners he took. this draft class definitely has the potential to be one of the greatest draft classes in Jets history.
And that needs nothing more right there. I think that's a perfect time to leave that off. And the last thing I just want to mention is, well, first off, Harrison, thank you so much for coming on to the show. I really appreciate it. And I want to talk, and I'm not going to lie, you have so many things going on that I just kind of copied and pasted your Twitter bio. And I was like, all right.
So I do a lot of stuff. I try to.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I get myself out there.
I love it. So you're the owner of Take Flight Media.
Yep, that's my company. I own it. I created it. I own the company. We do reporting and writing for the Jets. We have a website, takeflightmedia.org. I write and report there, as well as I have other writers that I'm bringing on as well that write on the site. On Twitter, as you mentioned, I have a decent sized presence. It's a lot of fun, talking about the Jets, getting with the takes, and I got takes there, stats, videos, media. Do it all, try to bring as much content as I can. You can find me there at NY Jets TF Media. But on Monday nights, one of my favorite things, I got my podcast I do. A lot of fun. Talk all about them Jets. It's awesome because it's live, which is great. I tell all the guys, come in throughout the thing. If you watch it, you can see, people are bringing in comments. They got me laughing. We're interacting back and forth. We're talking about stuff. It is a lot of fun. I also have guests on. I've had guys like Matt O'Leary and Green Bean, but I've also had players. I had John Franklin Myers and Bryce Huff. I had exclusive interviews with both of them on my channel. So definitely check that out. The interviews are up there. It's called the Take Flight Spit and Fire Podcast.
And that is the name of your YouTube channel as well, for people who don't know?
Yep. The YouTube channel is the Take Flight Spit and Fire Podcast.
Love it. And you're also, just tell me real quick, because I was curious as well. So you're the co-host of the Show That Never Sleeps podcast too. What is that all about?
Yes. I do a lot. So we have me, it's through IE Sports Radio. IE Sports Radio is a great sports platform. They have a lot of great content there. They hired me and my co-host Pierre, who's an awesome guy. We do all New York sports. So we focus on, I talk about the Yankees, the Jets, the Nets, and the Islanders. And he talks about the Giants, the Rangers, the Mets, and the Knicks. And we go back and forth. It's a lot of fun. All New York sports is that one. On Friday, I'm also a co-host of the Weapons Hot Podcast. Yes, that's awesome. Next. Yeah, man, we do that on Friday. It's me, CJ DeSimone, Jimmy Jardine, and Kevin the Action Man Jackson. It is a lot of fun. The four of us have a great time. We talk all about the Jets. And then every once in a while, we do something called Weapons Hot After Dark, which is a blast because that we just say whatever the hell we want. There's no filter there. Just whatever we're thinking, whatever's on the mind, expletives flying. It's a lot of fun.
Now, those two podcasts, where can we find those?
Definitely. So the weapon. So I guess the Show That Never Sleeps podcast, the All New York Sports one I do, where we talk about all New York sports. Again, you can find that through IE Sports Radio. That's on Spreaker.com, as well as a lot of other applications. Weapons Hot Podcast, which again is an awesome platform. CJ is the main host. The rest of us, we all go back and forth. There's four of us. You can find that through WWSRN, the Worldwide Sports Radio. They can find them on Twitter, Facebook, everything. And then our After Dark that we do, we usually do that on YouTube.
Awesome. I'm going to, just for anyone who's wondering, if you're listening on any other streaming platforms, I'm going to link all of Harrison's accounts and his YouTube channel in my YouTube description below. So just please check him out. He's been a fantastic guest. I love talking Jets with anyone. I really hope we get to talk again. Hopefully, maybe we'll be talking mid-season when the Jets are in a playoff position. Maybe we'll be talking after the season when the Jets are in the actual playoffs, which would be awesome. I really appreciate you coming on, man. You've been awesome. Thank you so much.
Oh, it was my absolute pleasure, man. I'm really glad to come on here. Love talking about the Jets. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, brother. All right. Thank you guys for listening or watching. Like I said, I'll link Harrison's links in the description below. Have a great day. Thanks for listening.